Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com. Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Dobry večer and welcome to the Bohemican Podcast. I'm Pete Coleman.
And I'm Travis Dow from the History of Alchemy Podcast. Tonight we'll talk about the Knights Templars. They're officially known as the Poor Knights of Christ and the Temple of Solomon. They're basically a crusader order that was endorsed by the Catholic Church starting around 1129 and lasted some 200 years. They started as a very humble order, so their main color was white, which was the color of poverty, and their symbol had two knights sharing a horse, right? So very humble beginnings. Now they're called Templars because their main headquarters was in Jerusalem. The king there allowed them to set up shop on the Temple Mount in Jerusalem, like, you know, Solomon's Temple, right? Now, according to legend, because they got so wealthy from these humble beginnings that by the end of the 200 years, a lot of people owed them money, including the Pope, kings, all kinds of nobility. And, you know, how did they get so powerful so fast? Well, according to legend, when they're on the Temple Mound, they excavated there and found some object of power. Think like the Holy Grail, maybe Ark of the Covenant, Indiana Jones, anyone? So this obviously made them incredibly powerful, right?
What's more powerful than money?
Yeah.
Really, and wealth. And this is where it really comes down to. The Templars basically invented the banking system in Europe. What they would do is they would tell a pilgrim, hey, you know what? Give me your gold and your debarkation city, which would be, you know, our area, which would be France or Germany. And they would then give you a letter of credit. You would take this letter of credit, and once you got to Jerusalem, hopefully you made it there safely, on this very expensive route, they would then give your money back when you found a Templar in Jerusalem. This may have been the very first system of checks that we might think of today. The route of the pilgrims was actually very, very dangerous. There were robbers along the way. They were going through difficult territories. If you made it to the ships and weren't robbed in Venice on the way to Antioch, then maybe the ship went down in a storm. There were a lot of things that were in front of you to make this pilgrimage. And since pilgrims and crusaders did need a lot of money to get to the Holy Land, the Templars were more than happy to help them avoid carrying money on their persons. So this whole system seemed to work out for everybody. This model was so successful that they had fortifications throughout the pilgrimage routes all throughout Europe and into the Holy Land, and the Templars did well to set themselves up in certain cities that would include three or so settlements in Prague. To give you an idea about this relation to Prague, it was in 1230 that the Templars were introduced to the city of 100 spires by Wenceslaus I. He was under great pressure from area nobility that got the connection of the power of the Templars from the nation of France. So he said, okay, I'm going to put these folks right here in the city of Prague.
So it was banking and not the Holy Grail?
Banking. Yeah, follow the money. I think that works in any era.
Man, I thought they found the Ark or something. One of the sites that's really interesting here in Prague is up behind the castle. It's Strahov Monastery, and we've
talked about that before.
Yeah, we mentioned the Devil's Bible was there, so we mentioned it in Rudolf II. The beer podcast, because they have
see how I went to that
great...
first. I went to beer before the Devil Bible. So
your priorities. This is clear. Yeah, I think we've mentioned it a few times. It's pretty cool. And we're going to mention it again because there's a restaurant kind of tucked away up behind it. And it's basically – it was a natural cave. And then it has been hollowed out and built upon. And it has awesome, like really impressive, huge kind of masonry, like bricks. And you know, you can tell that they've built at it for centuries, really, because there's just, you know, one arch of bricks and another, and then you can still see the original cave walls in places. So they've, you know, made this cave bigger and deeper, and it's basically a wine cellar. So, you know, they had vineyards and everything.
And what is this restaurant called?
It's called Peklo, which means hell.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, because it goes pretty deep down there.
Double de hood.
Yeah.
Which is bon appetit.
Yeah, but it's a cool place. Like back when there was monks living in the monastery, there would be a underground tunnel going from the monastery to the winery. So even in the winter, they could get to their wine without having to freeze or, you know, go out in the Prague winter here. But yeah, that's not the only cool thing in Strahov.
Well, actually, take a look across the river, and you will see an area that a lot of people kind of miss, unless you're looking for the John Lennon Wall, if you ever know where that is exactly, near the Anglo-American University in Prague. But it's just north of Campa Island, and it's called the Church of Our Lady Below the Chain, which is a very odd-sounding name to a lot of people. But if you can stay with us here for a minute. The Charles Bridge that we all know of today wasn't always called the Charles Bridge. That was relatively new in the 1800s. That was actually named the Charles Bridge. But the predecessor to that was called the Judith Bridge. And the Judith Bridge was just askew a little bit across the Vltava River. And it really hooked into a 10th century Gothic basilica known as Our Lady Below the Chain, because they were responsible for having the chain for the bridge for the toll. Yeah. So of course, none of that is there today, but the name stuck. Originally, the basilica was constructed for the Order of St. John of Jerusalem. After 1314, when the Order of St. John of Jerusalem obtained funds by selling off the property of, get this, the now-defunct Knights Templar, this Romanesque church was knocked down, and the construction started on a very grand Gothic three-aisle basilica that we see today. The remnants from the older building that had involved with the Knights Templar have been preserved, and you can actually see them to the right side of what is now the courtyard. Many years ago, I got a chance while I was visiting Prague to actually go down there by the John Lennon Wall, and you can actually see this basilica. What's interesting is that you'll see something called these ironworks on a gate, and you think that it's actually the signal for the Templars, the symbol for it, but it's not. It's actually the symbol of the Maltese cross for a Maltese order. But it looks just like the Templar cross.
Okay. Yeah.
So it don't get that so much confused with the Templars and the Maltese cross, but you are looking at the foundations of the Templars right there, right on the Vltava River.
Another very interesting site is right downtown in Prague 1 in the old town. There is not much of it left. There's an alleyway behind Tin Church right off of Old Town Square that's called Templarska. And it's really just a, now it's just a kind of a curiosity on a map. There's nothing there. However, when you come to the end of that street, it's really an alleyway. When you come to the end of that alleyway, it goes underneath a building, like through an arch. And where that arch is, there used to be a wooden church called the Ascension of St. Paul. And that was one of their main churches, that really a Templar church in Prague. And another interesting legend there is there's something interesting often associated with Templar churches, and that's a Black Madonna. And the Templars, I wouldn't say they were super secretive, but a lot of what we know about them came from their critics and their enemies later on, and their horrible confessions and everything. But so no one can really put their finger on it and say that the Black Madonnas mean this. However, this is a huge phenomena within the Catholic Church. I mean, there's hundreds of them around the world. There's some 450 in Europe. There's, I think, like 200 of those are in France. There's something like 11 or so in Bohemia, and a couple in Prague, actually. And no one theory could explain them all. Like, some people think that it's Mary Magdalene instead of the Virgin Mary. Others think that they have something to do with Isis and Osiris instead of, you know, not Christianity at all. Even though they're in Catholic churches, they might have just taken that over. There's weird ones, like ones with huge, like one big eye where their face should be. And in medieval times, they wouldn't even touch them because they thought that they were demonic. And if you touched them, that you'd become possessed. And there was ones with the third eye, you know. So maybe relics from other religions that ended up in a church. It's hard to say, but from the Templars, it's interesting because they were in a lot of their churches, and this one in specifically. So on Saletna Street, there's a house of the Black Madonna, and on the corner you can see a statue of the Black Madonna, and it doesn't really fit because the house is a really famous Cubist building. Like if you go there, I think so, obviously built in the 1930s sometime, but it still has one of the world's last Cubist interiors. It's the Orient Cafe, I think. Cubism as an architecture is very rare. That's kind of a Prague thing. There's not much anywhere else. So it's the last interior. But this Black Madonna has another cool story because just to give you an example of some specific Black Madonnas, for instance, there's the probably the world's most famous one is in Poland. And it's just a portrait of the Virgin Mary that over ages and ages kind of it, you know, turned black with time. So nothing weird there. But there's another one in Costa Rica that where my wife's from. And there's a story that they found this little black statue in the woods. And when they took it to a church or when they took it somewhere, they gave it to a priest and it was gone the next day. And then they went back to the woods where they found it and it was back. And then so a priest locked it in a box and the next day it was back. And then finally they just built a church around it because they knew obviously it needed to be there. So, you know, it's still there. There's a spring nearby and it's, you know, it's holy water and the whole nine yards. But this Black Madonna, the interesting thing about it was this church was burnt down. And we'll tell you why later. But when it was burnt down, the whole church was just burnt to a crisp. Nothing left. Even the metal was melted. It was a really hot fire. However, the Black Madonna was right in the middle, completely unfazed. So what they like to do around here, if there's some cool story, they like to commemorate that in, you know, several ways that we've talked about in other episodes. So the Black Madonna is still right across the street there in the house of the Black Madonna. And what's cool about the Ascension of St. Paul is we mentioned Prague's underground before. And the foundation and the pillars that are holding up this modern building is still the same. So in theory, if you go underground, you're still in the underground, like the cellar of the Ascension of St. Paul. It's pretty cool. Like right now, if you want to find it, there's a Templar, it's called Templarska, but it's just an archway from Saletna, so it's easy to miss. But there's you'll probably see a sign for Einstein Pizza, and there's like a Templar Cafe right there. So if you're really looking, if you see the House of the Black Madonna, if you can find where that is, the Black Madonna is looking right at it, almost like from a Dan Brown novel. I mean, if you follow her gaze, you'll find that where the church used to be. It's pretty cool.
I think there's probably a lot of people that take tours of Prague for many different reasons. Some would be for Jewish pilgrimages, others for Christian pilgrimages. I think that there's some out there that come here to kind of look at the occult, things that would really pique their interest. And I think the Templars kind of fit into that, Travis, because I think you look at what they left behind, or more to the fact that you look at what we can't find about them other than the legends and the stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And one of those legends and stories have to deal with just this Seletna area. Seletna Lane is a place with so many different reported ghost stories, and from butchers to women of the evening to headless people.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that I heard was, we will need if you're a local listener, please write us with some, if you know any more details about this. But I was told that about a century ago, Seletna was considered so haunted that people would be worried to go out by themselves at night, right? So I don't know about a lot of these ghost stories, but you know, turn of the century, let's say, they were really worried about this street.
So Seletna Lane is a place covered in mystery, and it's one of my favorite places to walk around late at night when a lot of the tourists go back to their hotels and some are finished with their day or they're drinking in the pub. It's relatively a quiet area near the Church of Tian in Old Town, in the Ungolt area, which was a medieval area where merchants would stay the night or several weeks to sell their goods. And now it's relatively pretty quiet, cramped lanes and alleyways. And you can actually squint, see her, and you know, really listen hard, and maybe hear some ghosts walking around there.
I think you'd be hallucinating late at night.
I might have been
alone on the street.
Too many beers, maybe that's
should
probably
I,
what
should
happened.
Should I be worried?
You might need to be worried.
Because okay. I am. I'll tell you.
You know, I do think that there are some people that take these legends to heart, and they actually do walk around late at night to cause, you know, just a little bit of fun. But that is something that is very interesting when you do see it, because it kind of brings these legends to life. And some of those legends include, for example, the Butcher with the Burning Axe or the Headless Templar, which we'll definitely talk about.
I saw. Oh, you're talking about the Butcher.
Yeah, the guy with the shining axe.
Yeah,
of course I've seen
him late at night. Yeah, okay.
By the light of a full moon. So you need to be aware of that. One of the oldest streets in Prague is Seletna Lane. It connects the Old Town Square with the Republic Square. It's lined with all these picturesque houses you've probably seen in these travel guides, adorned with the house symbols that represent ages worth of stories. But the lane belonged to the Royal Way of Czech Kings. So if there ever was a procession of the Czech King some kind of burial procession, they would walk this area. It was a way of coronation parades to Prague Castle up the hill. The Royal Way started at the Royal Court and continued all the way through Old Town Square and across the Charles Bridge and finally up to Prague Castle, as we said. The house at the temple, house number 27, stands at this place where there used to be the Church of Knights Templar in the 13th century. The street that goes through the house is therefore called Templova. After the Order of Knights Templar was abolished in the year 1312, on Friday the 13th, of course, was when the mandate went out, the members used to meet secretly in the basement of this house. The stone altar of the order was discovered there later. A hospital with the church was built there instead, and the building finally became a dwelling house in 1784. So a lot of history. You could not have to dig too far down into the foundations to find maybe some connections to the Knights Templar, but that would be right on Templova. Now, we just talked about one of the other legends that was very interesting was the Headless Templar. In the days of knights and noble horses, Prague was home to a very handsome Templar knight. Although there was very little known about his story, this handsomely dressed Templar knight is one of Prague's favorite ghosts and legends to talk about. It is said that he rides on his white stallion along the cobbled streets of Old Town without a head. There's the catch, right? So he would challenge people to give him release from this really horrible state of existence and imprisonment. And what he would ask was, please, if you are strong enough, take my sword from my side and plunge it through my ghostly heart. All right, well, I don't know if I'd stick around long enough to have that conversation with this Headless Templar, but this would free him from his eternity wandering the streets around this area. So believers of this legend of the Knights Templar really would have an interesting place of finding it on Lilova Street after midnight, which is very close to Bethlehem Chapel, which is not a stone's throw away from the Letaba River. So if you get close to that area, you might see him, and that would only happen between the hours of midnight and 1 a.m. or 2 a.m., and that would probably be something that would send me running the other direction, Travis.
So yeah, definitely watch out for the headless Templar. But how would he even see you? How can he talk without the? I'm so confused. Is he holding his head? Is that
see,
what?
See, here's the problem with Czech legends, Travis. You can't pull at the strands here. If you start pulling at the bits and pieces, this whole tapestry
well,
is gonna
fall
apart.
I know. Yeah, I actually
just go with it, man.
I know a somewhat similar story, also about a knight and you know looking to be because he did some horrible deed in life and. Yeah, it's but yeah, well, it falls apart pretty quickly.
Yeah. Here's the truth to a lot of these things. Prague is, and I've said this about Prague many times. It is the best of Europe. It is the worst of Europe, and you don't have to walk more than several feet to be around some of the more grotesque, horrible stories that mankind's ever had a part of, taken a part of, right here in Prague. You also see some be around places where. Historically, there were reminiscences of great scientific discovery and artistic expression, freedoms that weren't given to other people in Europe. But at the same time, there are also some pretty dark stuff around here, and I think that this does come through in the legends.
Makes
so
for great stories.
It makes for great stories. There is a little bit of that occult and that darkness that really fits well to Prague.
But okay, but it's not just Prague. There's more stuff going on in other places around Moravia. We don't want to forget about the Templar areas that survived the Purge of 1312, which was the end of the Templars, which we'll talk about in a second here. But that included the fortress called Tempelstein in Moravia, which is it's near Brno. And then today, the ruins of the castle are on a steep cliff above Jihlava, about 2 kilometers northwest of the village Jamolice.
That's exactly right. The river that goes through is Jihlava. Which is right in the very beginning parts of southern Czech Republic.
Have you been there?
I have.
Oh, okay.
There's not much left of this Templar stronghold. Just a couple stone arches left and a lot of vegetation growing around it. But it is a remembrance of a fortification that never was taken. That kind of leads us to the end of what happened to the Templars. Bohemia, Moravia, and other parts of Central Europe had a different sort of outcome. If you were in France or in the outskirts of Italy, going into what we know as Germany today, things weren't so good for you if you were a Templar. You talked about being imprisoned, you talked about being tortured, killed, and everything confiscated. What happened basically here in Bohemia was a little bit different. You were allowed to survive, and sometimes you were absorbed by different Catholic orders. Mm-hmm. But your property and all the things that you had were confiscated, but you were allowed to live on. So it was a little bit different. I think that lends a little bit of truth to Tempelstein down in Moravia, that it did last a little bit longer before it changed hands by several families in that part of Czech Republic or Bohemia at the time.
Yeah, that is interesting because some of the others were not so lucky. So yeah, in other parts of Europe, they didn't come to quite such a nice end. After some 200 years, they were just extremely wealthy. So remember I mentioned these humble beginnings? Forget that. We're talking bankers. Some people say they were the first real international corporation. The Pope's rights that he gave them, including not following local laws. So they didn't pay taxes to anybody. They didn't follow any local laws to anybody. They had no one above them at all. Kings could not hold them to their laws, nothing. Now, I mentioned that a lot of noblemen, kings, even the Pope, owed them money. And one in particular, which was ended up being their downfall, was King Philip IV of France. King Philip IV just happened to be in a very long war with England at the time and was in need of some funds badly. So what he did is he went to Pope Clement V and said, hey, listen, I'm paraphrasing now, but he said, hey, listen, you owe the money, I owe the money, why don't we just not pay them back? Can't you just please disband them, you know, get rid of these guys? Well, the problem was is that they were hugely popular. We're talking protectors of pilgrims, right? The Crusaders. At this point, Jerusalem had fallen. You know, they didn't really have the Middle Eastern strongholds anymore, but they were still very wealthy and very powerful, and the people loved them. So what King Philip did is he had Jack du Molay, who's the Grand Master of the Knights Templar, he had him arrested, and under extreme torture, made him sign a confession that was literally meters long. So he just unrolled this thing in front of him, and we're talking, oh man, like horrible things, like murdering babies, child sacrifice, spitting on the cross, devil worship, you know, anything, just weird rituals, you know, to get into the church, weird rituals within there, like a secret order kind of thing.
Well, this was actually a very personal situation. If you can imagine, King Philip was very close to Jacques de Molay, because he was a very close friend of his daughter's. So there was a betrayal with this, and I think that King Philip, when he really put the nails to this guy, what year 1314, he produced these horrible things that he later would recant, but right. The damage was already done.
Yep, yeah. At this point, it was too late. And King Philip IV took this signed confession and published it, okay? So now the people's opinion changed. And then after this happened, King Philip IV went to Clement V and said, look, now's our time. You said they were popular? No longer, right? So Clement V said, okay, you can do whatever you want with him. And so on Friday the 13th, this is where we get our Friday the 13th legend from, on basically one day, he had them rounded up all over France and beyond, anywhere he could, you know, say, hey, because let's face it, a lot of noblemen owed them money. So a lot of people were on board with them. Had them all rounded up, many of them tortured, more confessions signed, but a lot of them just burned at the stake. Now, a lot of them recanted, like you just said, and they, you know, so including Jacques de Molay. But so, for instance, like many, many recanted. But for instance, Jacques du Molay, again, a lot of what we know about them was written by their critics and their enemies. But what we do know is that in his final moments, as he's being tied up to be burned alive, he asks to be facing Notre Dame with his hands up in kind of a praying motion, right? And then he curses the Pope and the King, okay? And then he's burned alive. Now, the interesting part of the story is that the Pope, who was pretty old, to be fair, he died shortly thereafter, and before a year was up, the king died in a hunting accident, okay? But that's not where it ends, because Clement V, his body was laid for public viewing in a wooden church, and the wooden church was struck by lightning and burnt to the ground. And to date, he is the only Catholic pope to have been cremated. So there you go. So was it a curse? Was it real?
I'm going to say yes. That sounds pretty rough.
Right up there with the Holy Grail, yeah. Well, I mean, so yeah, I think you mentioned like some of them were able to survive. And I think in Portugal, they just changed their name. So, you know, you mentioned in Bohemia, they were able to live but had their possessions taken.
There are plenty of legends of them getting ships and heading towards a Catholic favored Scotland at the time.
Which, when I was doing my research here, I found out that Scotland at the time was excommunicated, as in the whole country. I didn't know that could happen.
Absolutely. And they,
like, yes, this is normal.
They say some of that treasure found its way there. There are some that say that it found its way to Nova Scotia, in North America. That might be a little bit of a stretch. But there are so many legends attached to the demise of the Templars. But it is amazing when you talk about the Dominicans who took over where the Knights of the Templars left off here in Prague. The Jesuits that later came several centuries later, there are many orders that have their stamp on this city and on Bohemia. Mm-hmm. And the Templars were part of that legacy. So, Travis, when we talk about the influence the Templars had here on Prague and the Czech Republic, what's your final sort of thought on that? We talk about, you know, they had a substantial click here, if I can call it a click.
I
may not. If I can call it a foothold, let's call it a foothold. And we have some foundations that are left. Do mm-hmm. you think there's any treasures here? Do you think they buried any treasure?
There are a lot of stories. Yeah, there's some interesting stories there. I'm going to say no, but there are Jesuit legends too about hidden treasure. So you never know. Anytime, because the Jesuits left in a hurry. So anytime someone was kicked out very quickly. So like when I mentioned that Ascension of St. Paul Church being burned, that was the same. That was the downfall of the Templars, right? So maybe if you go underneath in the basement, if you ask the Einstein Pizzeria really nicely. Hey, can I go to your beer cellar and tap the wall a little bit?
I'll take a pizza pie and a little bit of information about the Templars. That's all you got to go in and ask them. They might look at you a little weird. Again, Prague is an interesting place. Bohemia is an interesting place with so much history that's just dripping from the walls. And what I usually find fascinating is that if you find somebody native to these small towns or hamlets in the Czech Republic or to Prague, they'll sit down, they'll tell you these stories. They'll tell them like their old family stories, that they have a connection to them. Because some of them are outlandish, some of these like the Headless Templar, and some of them have a great deal of historical relevancy. Mm-hmm. And I never get tired of hearing them. I've been here for several years now, and I love it.
Yeah,
I absolutely love it. So speaking of these great stories that are either told through oral tradition, we also have a bibliography tonight where we got a lot of information, and one in particular is The Esoteric Prague, a book written by Yuri Kuchar, as well as one of my favorites, The 77 Prague Legends by Elena Jeskova. Some great books with some great information, fun reads, especially about legends here in the Czech Republic and also in Prague.
If you want to hear more about some kind of interesting parts of kind of the weird parts of Prague, come by, check out our sister podcast, historyofalchemy.com, where there's a few episodes of alchemists that ended up in Prague for the same reasons. It's this mystical city. We'd love to hear from you. If you happen to be a local listener and know some more funny stories, by all means, let us know. Give us some suggestions.
It fits very well with the Bohemican podcast site, which is bohemican.com. You can come by and take a look at my site, where I've got all these great historical tidbits and information about people, places, and locations throughout the Czech Republic and Bohemia and Moravia. You can take a look at that. I promise you'll spend some time there if you really dig this kind of stuff. And all these great legends. There's a growing list that I have on the website right now at bohemican.com. Remember, we'll be back every 2 weeks. We want to thank you all very, very much for listening.
Hey, and one more thing.
Yes.
Rate us on iTunes.
This is very important. Because we want everybody to listen to this podcast. So if you can, go to iTunes.
This helps us out.
Subscribe to us and rate us.
This helps us out a lot. It kind of helps us move up the rankings. So if you appreciated it, hey, let them know. Let us know. And by all means, yeah, subscribe. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. Thank you very much.
Ciao for now.